All right, thanks. I'm going to continue to talk a little bit about some of the challenges of growing winter canola in the Pacific Northwest. Co-authors Jack Brown, Megan Wingerson, Brad Packish. We're primarily a plant breeding cultivar development group, but we do quite a bit of agronomic research as well, because we have a lot of growers with questions. I thought I'd give a brief introduction to the crop area that we're talking about. Figure out how to use this. Turn it around. So this is the main production area in eastern Washington, northern Idaho, as well as the southern Idaho. Our research is primarily in the little higher rainfall zone than what Frank was just talking about. And Frank was talking about some stuff up here in the Okanagan and out here in the very edge right before the irrigated band. Most of our research is centering in more a little further east, and then over northern Idaho and down on the Camas Prairie. And even though we're talking about enough moisture here for annual cropping, there are quite a few growers who are using fallow in the rotation so they can grow winter canola. Down in this area, one of the reasons for that as well is they often have wet springs where they have trouble getting in the field. So they sometimes can't get their crops planted. In the Pacific Northwest, winter canola will get really big, and we can get some really huge yields if you can get the crop established. So what you really have to do is focus on getting the crop established in the fall and getting it through the winter. Typically then, you're going to be very successful. We've done a little bit of work in the past on how big the plants need to be to survive the winter, and I saw a similar poster yesterday with fairly similar results. We did a little greenhouse study years ago. A graduate student, Nick Whitman, looked at how many growing degree days you had to get the plants up to different sizes, and these are in with a baseline of 4 degrees C and growing degree days in Celsius. So one leaf, we're going to need about 225 days. Two leaves, 260, 270 days. And that's really not going to be quite big enough to make it through most winters. And so what we'd really like to see is a plant there, like the middle plant that has 3 leaves or a little bit bigger, so we're probably looking at 300 growing degree days as a minimum to establish the crop. And as the growing season varies widely across the Pacific Northwest, we can't pick a calendar day that will apply to the entire Northwest. But by looking at historic weather data for the different regions, people are actually able to pick their latest planting date that way. So if you have irrigation, that makes it easy to establish the crop, although the irrigated growers would probably argue with my use of the word easy. But it is a helpful tool, and this does allow them to recrop. So if you don't have irrigation as an option, what I mentioned before is you're going to have to look at planting winter canola on fallow ground most of the time. A few years ago, we did spend quite a bit of time looking at how to recrop winter canola. We found that some years you could establish it after peas or barley, a little more trouble establishing it after winter wheat. But if you had moisture at the right time in the fall to get it growing, you could actually recrop winter canola. And about 1 in 10 years this works. This is a field this year near Lewiston, Idaho, where they had a nice rain event in late August, and the grower took advantage of that and went into some barley stubble and has a good-looking winter canola crop. So most times, though, we're going to be planting on fallow. And this is one of the problems that we have with our traditional dates in August, is there's often not enough moisture in the surface of the soil, even though we've got plenty of moisture down lower, to establish the crop. And so we get some real spotty stands. Now, some of these will fill in enough and the canola will perform well, but then we have to deal with weeds as well. And then sometimes, you just don't get any establishment. One of the ways to combat this is with a deep furrow drill. Obviously, this is not going to work well in direct seed or a no-till situation. And not everybody, especially in the higher rainfall, has access to a deep furrow drill. When Clark was up at Idaho, he did some work with forage, and we found if you plant it earlier than traditional, you can establish canola really well in June and July because there's still plenty of moisture left in the fallow, and you can get some really large plants. So we decided to see how feasible this would be for a seed crop, whether or not you take forage off of it or not. The first thing we found is there are some winter canola varieties that if you plant them too early, they're going to flower during the summer. And then when winter comes along, it's going to kill them, not surprisingly. And what you see here in the background is a plant that even though it didn't bolt, the variety got a little taller and the growing point was well up off the ground, and those tend to have poor winter survival as well. This was a trial over the winter that we harvested in 2014, and you can see there is very differential winter survival in some years. These, for the most part, were plots that did not flower, so we expected them to make it through the winter, but we had that in Moscow, where this trial was, northern Idaho, we did have 5 degrees without snow cover and high wind, so it was pretty wet. It was pretty cold. We had some of the plants that had the higher crowns and more elongated stems didn't do as well. And so this is a little closer view of what that looks like. So in addition to the varietal differences, we noticed another problem, and here you can see two things going on. One, we've got difficulty with establishment in the dry soils that I've already talked about, but those plants don't look right. They seem to have dried up, and when you look closer, what you see is that they've been devoured by flea beetles. And this is the second generation of flea beetles that have come out that summer and will be overwintering. And when you look closely at them, this is a forage plot, there were just bajillions of them. That's the technical term, bajillions. This is a forage plot, but we saw this. We've seen this in several years. We also see some pretty heavy aphid pressure. This is the only thing that's green in mid to late August, and so it attracts insects like a magnet. So we thought we should look at how well we can control insects in this situation. We did our classic sort of insecticide treatment where we had plots that were untreated, plots where we just used the seed treatments. In this case, we used Helix Extra. A foliar treatment applied when needed. In this situation, we applied 2 applications. And this was, I've forgotten the name of the chemical. Karate or, it wasn't Capture, it was Warrior. Which is what growers are using now. And then we did a combination. If you look at the damage scores, you can see where we didn't treat it. You know, we had very poor control, low scores, damage like you saw in the previous picture. We control insects. Obviously, we're not going to have as much damage. But if you look at the yield, there's no difference. You know, it's 3,400 pounds pretty much across the board. And so what happened this year and the next year is that in the fall, after the insects went away because of the frost, we had some nice open weather, we had moisture, and the crop recovered very well, to the point where if you stood back from the trial, you couldn't tell which plots had been treated and which ones hadn't, and which ones had. We repeated this trial. We've done this for 4 years. The first 3 years, we didn't see yield differences. We did see similar insect damage. This last year, we finally saw a bit of a yield difference from when we treated or when we didn't. Interestingly enough, last fall, we had the least visible symptoms in the untreated plots. And so I think what happened is we had a little stress. We had this really hard winter with hard freezes, And so that the little stress in this case where the plants didn't have a chance to recover and they were hit hard by the freezes meant that we did see some yield differences. So what we've been advising growers is that they do need to control the insects because we can't guarantee that good regrowth in the fall every year. So what date is going to be optimum? We took four cultivars that are adapted to early planting. Initially, we had four sites, two in northern Idaho, one northeastern Oregon, Pendleton, a little bit drier, and Kalispell, Montana. Three planting dates throughout the summer, what we would consider a good seeding rate to get a good stand. We also looked at soil moisture. We continued the trial two more years without a Montana site. And we moved up to La Crosse, Washington, instead of Lewiston, just because it was a little bit simpler for us. Went through some pictures real quick here, what the crop looks like when we plant it that early. And then a more traditional planting in late August. Mid-September, which was not part of the trial, but then just for contrast, these plants are big enough to make it through most winters. And this year, you can see the size of the plants reversed. This was in part, I think, to a little more winter damage in the early planting. Soil moisture. We're using soil moisture when we plant early. So typically, we're going to have about 15% moisture left in October with the late planting dates. You know, versus 9 or 10 inches with the early planting dates. But at least in our situation, we're typically not going to run out of moisture in northern Idaho like Frank sees further west in Washington. This is the planting dates, what they looked like in January of this year. There was still some green down there. I expected them to survive. But we had that hard freeze that Frank mentioned where we were looking at -5 Fahrenheit with no snow cover in the spring after plants had started to grow. Pretty unusual. That took them out. In Moscow, it didn't get that cold, and you can see that the plants can regrow even though they have some serious damage. They'll regrow from axillary buds. So when should we plant? Well, it depends on the year, but what we've seen on average is these July planting dates are probably going to be best. When we wait to August, some years we get really good yields like we did this year down in Moscow 2014, but there are some years where we don't have enough moisture left in those top 3 inches of soil to get the crop established. So if you can't establish it, then you can't. So we'll finish up with the last slide here, what I tell growers. Choose an adapted variety, plant into moisture, plant as late as practical, but you got to watch your soil moisture. Don't plant too late, and do control your insects. And finally, you should probably buy some crop insurance.
You got time for one quick question. One question. There we go.
I'm just really surprised that June planting did not. You're saying that June planting did not completely dry your soil profile by August or October, I think.
No, it didn't. Although what we typically have over in eastern Washington and northern Idaho is we typically have some September rains that allows it to recover. But I've only seen of these 4 years, I only saw 1 year where I was worried that we really needed the rains to get it growing again before fall, and it does have to have some moisture to be growing in the fall to harden off. But because we're a little further east than you are, Bill, we have that chance.
Thank you very much.
Right, thank you.